That is so fucked up. It's fucked up. So fucked up. It is just so damn fucked up. That's fucked up.
Hey everyone, welcome to the podcast. This is That's So Fucked Up. We're your hosts. I'm Ashley Richards.
And I'm Macy Tollison.
Welcome back to another episode. Today we're going to talk about murder. So go on over to our website, That's So Fucked Up, the podcast. TSFU, the podcast.com. And that's where you can download Murder Bingo. And really all the bingos, because, you know, we have a different theme for every episode. And we actually haven't had any bingo submissions this month, y'all. So if you send your bingo in, there's a good chance we might pick your topic. So if you want to pick one of July's topics, get that shit in.
Definitely. Don't miss out. That's a good opportunity. And in addition, I'm going to remind you guys every time because I'm excited about them and I want you to be excited about them too. We're doing the bite-sized episodes. So small mini episodes that we will do weekly in addition to our regular programming. But you guys get to send us your stories, your favorite murder cases, or just generally fucked up stories. It could be a firsthand account. It could be a secondhand account. I don't give a fuck. I just want to read cool stories for about a 30-minute episode once a week. So you can email them to us or send them to our social media DMs.
I know that we have one really exciting bite-sized submission. My friend, what up, Aaron? Got held hostage for about 52 hours, I think, when she was 22 in somewhere in South or Central America.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I think it was pretty traumatic from what she told me.
I would think so. I
mean, yeah, God. How could it not be? So she's going to do a little write-up for one of our bite-sized episodes.
Cool. Not the hostage part, but the story part. Cool. Thanks, Sarah.
Yeah, sorry you got held hostage.
Jesus.
We don't like that.
No, that's insane. Also, per usual, go ahead and check out our blog posts for our sources from the episode, from all our research, and any just closing thoughts that we have on topics we usually post on the blog. You can, of course, check out our blog on our website. And for today's episode, definitely go check out the blog for this episode, which is our Pride episode. Happy Pride, everybody.
Happy Pride!
Because we're going to be adding some links for you guys to click and either donate and or get involved with initiatives against anti-transgender and homophobic violence. So go check it out, get involved, and let's tackle this epidemic together.
Yes, it's pretty fucked how much it's not been tackled still at this point.
Yeah, definitely need some more support and some more money and action thrown at this cause. So today, you know, in honor of Pride, I wanted to celebrate Pride in a way that's more truthful and a little bit more rooted in the oppression that especially Black trans women are facing right now, because it is an epidemic and it is a huge glaring issue that isn't getting talked about nearly enough as it needs to be. So I will be covering actually two murder cases that just happened last week. These were murders / hate crimes against Black trans women. And then I'm going to talk about some historical perspectives, including statistics about violence and murder rates in the trans community. And I'm going to give you guys a brief historical overview of the Stonewall Uprising and why it's so relevant today. So happy Pride Month. It's going to be a feel-good episode. Kind of, not really.
Well, that's why we gave you guys a little break in between this episode and the Ant Hill Kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we knew this one was going to be a little bit of a bummer, so strap in for that.
Yep.
Sorry, life is sad. And I'm going to tell the story of Dorian Gray and the mummy that was found in her closet.
Dorian Gray or Dorian Corey?
Dorian Corey, totally. Was Dorian Gray like the character from
50 Shades of Gray?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty sure.
Yeah, so not telling that story. Definitely telling the story of Dorian Corey.
Or no, Dorian Gray is a gothic and philosophical novel by Oscar Wilde, not 50 Shades of Gray.
Oh, well.
It's an old novel.
I was just brushing up on my Oscar Wilde reading recently. So
yeah, that makes sense.
That's probably why I got it confused.
Yeah, of course.
I've been brushing up on my old-timey literature.
I know you love philosophy and old-timey literature more than
love it.
More than anyone.
It's my it's the tops.
It was the original reality show of the day.
Boring.
Oh my god. I'm going to have you say that one more time so that I have a second option for editing purposes.
Okay. And I'm going to be covering Dorian Corey and the mummy found in her closet.
Such a wild story.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't know. It's a little bit lighter, I think, compared to yours.
Yeah, so. I think so, for sure. It'll be a good smorgasbord for you guys.
Yeah.
Should we get to sources?
Yeah, I'll go first because I'm going to tell my story first.
Yep.
I had an article from Atlas Obscura, an article from Investigation Discovery, and obviously Wikipedia. Because honestly, it was really hard to find any articles that were just about her and her life and not about just the crime.
Yeah, the media kind of doesn't really fucking care, unfortunately, about painting people as people sometimes. And I think that, you know, the humanity behind these cases tends to get overlooked in lieu of just sensationalizing it. So I definitely had a similar problem of finding personal details and real, like, accounts of who these people were, not just the circumstances involving their death. So a little frustrating.
Yeah.
So okay. I have quite a few sources today. I have an article by Anna North from 2019 from Vox, an article by Madeline Carlisle from this year, actually just a few days ago, from Time Magazine, an article by Aaron Donahue, also from this year, from CBS News. And I found three really good articles from HRC. And for those of you who don't know, HRC is the Human Rights Campaign. They're a nonprofit. You've probably seen their logo. It's like the dark blue rectangle with the yellow equal sign in the middle for equality. They're a really big humanitarian organization. So I have three articles from them, and then a last one from Garance Frank Ruta from 2013 from The Atlantic. So without further ado, I'm going to sit back and listen to you tell me about Dorian Corey's story.
Okay. So she was born in 1937 in Buffalo, New York. And in the 1950s, she worked as a window dresser in a Buffalo department store. And then she moved to New York City to study at Parsons Design School, which is like a pretty famous design school, actually. And then in the 1960s, Dorian toured as a snake dancer in the Pearl Box Review, which was a cabaret drag act. So it's kind of cool. She was like one of the OG, like, drag show queens.
Yeah, that's incredible. Just the, like, phrase snake dancer makes me really want to see it.
It makes me really anxious, honestly.
That too.
And it makes me think of Britney Spears.
Oh, yeah.
The iconic, like, python.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Oh, man, something's going on with Britney.
Yeah, she's spiraling. She needs some help. Somebody go help her.
Her Instagram makes me sad.
Her Instagram makes no fucking sense. And I'm so glad you feel that way, because every time I bring it up, people are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, look at her Instagram. No. She's slipping. She needs help. This isn't normal.
No, it's really sad. But her boyfriend's fucking hot, so.
Yeah, well, like, what's he doing for her mental health? Come on.
She's got that going on.
So. Yeah.
Anyways, also, Corey ran and designed a clothing label called Corey Design. And she was also the founder of the Voguing House of Corey. So she was very, very accomplished.
Wow.
I don't know if you saw the movie Paris is Burning about the voguing scene in early New York. Yeah, so it's about like the voguing and ballroom scene in New York, I think in the 80s and early 90s. And this was a place that gay and transgender and, you know, all people of the LGBTQIA+ community essentially could go and, you know, like express themselves in a place where they weren't in danger doing so and where they could have some sense of community.
Right.
And I don't know if you've ever seen voguing, but it's so fucking hard. Mm. Have you ever seen like not Madonna's voguing?
Oh, no, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, voguing itself is ridiculously hard and insanely creative and dope. And I can't imagine being able to do something so cool. There's a new show coming out about it, actually, that the whole ballroom scene on Netflix with Jamila Jamil, one of my favorite podcast hosts. So I can't remember the name of it, but it looks really cool.
Wait, the girl from...
From the good place?
Yeah. Oh. She has a show on True TV, too, that the Impractical Jokers are on sometimes.
She runs a whole campaign called I Way. She's a really outspoken advocate, and she's, like, incredible at her job and bringing awareness, and her social media presence is awesome. But anyway, I'll let you get back to your story. As I'm fangirling over her. Yeah, continue.
That's a great show too. But she held over 50 grand prizes from those voguing balls. Oh, I was gonna say, I took a voguing class one time and it was really hard. And it's a guy named Jacques, and he teaches here in the Bay Area. And if you look him up on YouTube, he's amazing.
Like, wow.
He's great at it. And if you get a chance to take a voguing class, you should, but be prepared to suck, because he was the only person in the room who looked even slightly cool doing it.
For sure.
It was fun, though. So in the 1990 acclaimed documentary, Paris is Burning, it really illuminated audience to the drag ball culture in New York in like an international way. And unfortunately, though, after that, about 3 years later, Corey died of AIDS-related complications at the Columbia Presbyterian Medical Center in Manhattan at the age of 56. And what's so sad about that time in particular for the gay community is just like how 90% of the population just got wiped out during the AIDS epidemic. Yeah. Like, I've talked to people who lived in San Francisco at the time who are homosexual, who said they lost most of the people that they loved.
A lot of friends, a lot of family, just gone super quickly. Our national response to that epidemic was so subpar. It's absolutely disgusting. We could do a whole episode about it, probably.
Dallas Buyers Club with Matthew McConaughey was super good about how... like AIDS drugs got introduced, because he started sneaking them. It's a true story. He started sneaking them from Mexico because the FDA wouldn't give the stamp of approval and people were dying. So he started getting the drugs from Mexico and bringing to them. It's actually a great story, but fucking get ready to cry if you watch it. But in the documentary, you know, it showed that Corey was just very beloved by the community, and she was a house mother and just really took in a lot of the younger generation and helped them, you know?
Yeah.
And a couple months after she died, in October 1993, one of her fellow drag performers, Lois Taylor, stopped by Corey's Harlem apartment because a couple men wanted to buy some of Corey's costumes. And when they opened the closet, they found the suitcase that she opened up. And she said that just this foul stench immediately came from it. And she said that she just called the cops without even opening it. She was like,
yeah,
no, that's not a good thing. So they found a body in the suitcase in the closet, and the body was in a fetal position wearing only boxer shorts and with a single bullet to its head. The body, they could tell, had been there for about 15 to 25 years.
That is an insanely long amount of time.
Yeah, so it had been in that closet for far, far long before Dorian Corey was dead.
Right.
Yeah. So they were able to get fingerprints off of the man, and he was identified as Robert Bobby Worley. Robert Bobby Worley, or Bobby as he was called, was born on December 18th, 1938. And they really don't know much about his life because he was, for the most part, estranged from his family. Mm. But one thing that they did know is that he served 3 years behind bars for rape and assault in 1963.
Oh, that's lovely.
So, violent man.
Yeah, clearly.
Like, sexual violence. So, a few theories popped up as to, you know, why Bobby Worley was in the closet. And there was one rumor that said there was a note on the body that said something like, "Oh, dear Lord, I'm sorry this man broke into my window." Like, essentially saying that she shot him because he was a robber. But that's, I there's like very little evidence to that. I think it's just a rumor.
Yeah, that sounds too convenient that, oh, there's a written confessional pinned to this guy's chest. Like, okay.
Yeah,
that exactly. Doesn't sound plausible.
But no, like, real evidence, you know.
Yeah. But it's not in the police report? Yeah, no.
Right. There was another theory that maybe somebody else had murdered him and Corey was protecting the real murderer.
That's interesting.
Most likely, they think that Corey was probably having a love affair with Bobby. And, you know, maybe because at the time and today, you know, it's people struggle with the pressure to, like, appear masculine and straight. And especially, you know, back in the 60s, 70s. It would probably come with a lot of stigma to date a transgender woman. So
from the perspective of the hetero guy, you're saying?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Because this guy, Reg Flowers, wrote a one-man play called Out of the Bag about the psyche of Robert Worley. And he said that he thought Worley may have, like, struggled with his attraction to Corey, and because of his internalized hatred and oppression, that he probably lashed out in bouts of frustration, which wouldn't be weird because he was obviously sexually violent.
Right, right.
So, you know, there's a good chance that she shot him in a lover's quarrel one night because maybe he got drunk and angry and was lashing out at her. And
right, maybe violent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He obviously had the tendency for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, that's the most likely story. And I guess even though he was apparently estranged from his family, Worley's brother said that he showed up drunk one night and was, like, going on and on about Corey.
Oh, so they did know each other. We have proof that they knew each other.
That, yeah, according to the brother. Why would he lie about that?
Yeah, that'd be weird to lie about.
Exactly. And Torres, the person who had found the body in the closet originally, said that Corey, in her last final days when she was in a haze and on morphine, had confessed to their friend Sally that she had killed somebody. And she apparently wrote, like, a short third-person story before she died.
Corey did? Or,
yeah. But it was like, supposed to be a fictional short story that she wrote about a transgender woman who kills her boyfriend after a fight about gender confirmation surgery.
Oh. That's interesting timing.
Yeah.
That's also a weird story to write, like, when you have a dead body in your closet. It's kind of like, well,
whether or not you killed that dead body. Yeah.
It's a little like, even though it's a fictional story, it seems like it's really close to a potential reality that happened.
Yeah.
Damn.
I mean, it sounds like basically like she killed him. And I think that Reege Flowers hypothesis is probably right.
Mm.
So this article that I read that was really good said that, you know, why do you think that Corey got away with murder? And probably because Corey's consistent cool and grace, the fact that Worley was estranged from his family, and the fact that, like, they didn't know much about his life. But the most strong probability is the othering and invisibility of two poor, sexually complex Black people navigating internal and external turmoil in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah, I could see that, especially, I mean, even today, but especially back then, like, nobody really gave a shit about these people's communities and their struggles and what they went through. I would imagine during this time, from Corey's perspective, like, the last thing I would do is also go to the police.
Exactly. If she shot him in self-defense, she's not going to call the police.
No. Or even if...
How's that going to go for her?
Exactly. Or even if she felt threatened or unsafe by her partner, there's no way she's going to go to the police, typically.
Mm-hmm. Because even if he's a Black man, she's a transgender Black woman, so she's lower than him automatically.
Yeah, she would be putting herself in direct danger by going
even
to the police.
Even more danger, yeah. She's exactly. In danger from him and then in danger from the police. So, yeah.
Wow. What a wild story, though.
Yeah, the article that I just quoted at the end was by Julianne Tiviton, and that was on Atlas Obscura, and that was a pretty well-written article if anybody wants to go, you know, take a deeper dive into that. But they also did an episode on Pose where I guess they kind of referenced Corey.
Mm.
So, yeah, so she's very famous, and unfortunately she's more famous for this crime than her life, which sounded pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, and her influence on the voguing community. It seems like she was incredibly influential and important to that community.
Totally, which there's not a whole lot about on. So
yeah, that is very frustrating. Yeah. It's just more like whitewashing of history.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Well, cool. Cool story.
Yeah, that's the story of the story of Dorian Corey.
I'm joined today by Dr. Seuss. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Seuss.
I'm here with my moose.
And my cat with his hat. Oh,
thank you for having me.
Well, so I'm going to give a brief overview on two really, really, really recent cases last week. There's not a lot of details about these cases because I think two contributing factors. One is, you know, the timing. It just happened. It takes a while for these stories to do a deep dive. And secondly, because they are Black trans women, typically a lot of details don't get reported on, which we've seen quite a bit. And actually, I want to do a little shout out to our research intern, Dia. She has been incredible with research. Really, really appreciate all that she does. And she pointed out some interesting things while doing her research for this episode, that it seems like when the victim is either transient or there wasn't a large community around them that was stable, the cases typically remain unsolved and there's very few details known. And it to her, she said it seemed like there's almost no covering or following up to the case also, probably because they are gay, trans, or transient, you know, any combination of those. And there's no social reason to find these people, right? And to really follow up on these cases, because especially in the eyes of the criminal justice system, I mean, they're so low on the totem pole. It's really sad. So yeah, it was hard for her and for us to find a lot of details. I think that really speaks volumes to the amount that we value these victims and the amount that we value cases like this. Because why do we know everything about BTK? Like, he's a piece of shit. I don't really care about another white serial killer who gets off on raping and strangling young girls. Like, I'd rather know details about people who are alive today, who have been victims of systemic oppression and systems. So, okay, I'm already getting mad. This is going to be good. So, I'm going to first talk about Rhea Milton. Rhea Milton was 25, which I just turned 25. This really struck me.
Happy birthday, Macy.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a lot going on. It's hard to celebrate right now. But yeah, so Rhea Milton was 25. She was shot and killed during a robbery in Liberty Township, Ohio on June 9th. So just 6 days ago from the day we're recording right now.
Oh, wow.
Rhea Milton worked as a home health aide and was also a student at University of Cincinnati. So a college student just like me. Sheriff Richard Jones, the local sheriff, in a news conference said that the three suspects in her murder, Caleb Tucson, Tyree Cross, and an unidentified 14-year-old girl, actually lured Rhea Milton to an area near a park to rob her and steal her car. At some point, they think that there was a fight between Milton and obviously the people who lured her, and they think that Tucson allegedly fatally shot Milton with a gun. Tucson also accidentally apparently shot and injured himself and was treated at a hospital and arrested along with the girl. So the local sheriff's office has issued a warrant for Tyree Cross, who was one of the people who lured her, for robbery and complicity to murder in Milton's death, and for unlawful sexual contact with the teen girl because, yeah, she's 14 and she's hanging out with these people. That's probably bad news, too. So the two people have been arrested and charged with her murder, but the third guy, Tyree Cross, like I just mentioned, that they have a warrant for, has not been apprehended. And like so many others, this is a huge talking point that we have. The media, you know, typically misgenders a lot of trans victims. And fortunately for Rhea, her sister has been incredibly vocal and outspoken about trans rights and setting the record straight. Rhea's sister, Ariel Mary Ann, who is also trans herself, says that, you know, the stories of her sister and other slain transgender victims are tragic and heartbreaking, but these stories need to be told. And it may be a sad song, but we're going to sing it again. And Ariel Mary Ann goes on to say, I will continue to fight and push for the voices of Black transgender women to be uplifted until the day I die. So those words really stuck with me, which is one of the reasons I wanted to highlight injustice against Black trans people in particular, because these stories just don't get talked about. So we don't have a lot of details about Rhea, but, you know, she's a young student, fucking got lured to get her car stolen and then get murdered for that. I mean, it's just unfucking believable.
Yeah, speaking of the misgendering, when we were looking at other cases and I was looking into Coco Williams, it was somebody said that the police had said she was a male prostitute.
Yeah.
A.
Not true.
Not a male. B. Didn't even, there was like no evidence that she ever even did sex work.
That's so ridiculous.
So it's just like, oh, we'll just throw the fucking slut label on them and it makes it more acceptable.
Yeah. We'll just discount all of their personality traits and humanity traits. And we're just going to label them to completely gloss over the fact that they're real people.
And what about the people who hire sex workers? Okay, sorry. Now I'm just like, why? You know, why don't they get any guff?
Why aren't they responsible? Because they're all straight men for the most part. They're mostly dudes, and they're allowed to hire all these sex workers, and there's no stigma on the clientele. Why is that the case? There's only stigma on the people providing the services. Like, if there was no demand, there would be no services.
Exactly.
It's a fucked system.
It's ridiculous.
I'm getting heated. Getting real heated. So, you know, that's a very basic information little blurb on Rhea Milton. I wish I had more details. I hope that we get more details in the future, but that's the story right now that I could find. So I want to talk about another case which happened only a day earlier than Rhea Milton, the very day before on June 8th in Southwest Philadelphia, Dominique Remy Fels was found just before 7 p.m. on the banks of the, I'm going to butcher this word, I think it's Schuylkill River.
Yeah, that sounds good.
It's a very hard word to pronounce. There's a lot of Y's and CH's. Anyway, so the chief inspector, Scott Small, told the local news station that the woman, aka Dominique Remy Fels, had suffered stab wounds and trauma to the head and face, and that her body was found with both legs severed. Police have not identified a suspect, and they're actually asking the public for any information and tips. So if we by chance have any listeners in the Southwest Philadelphia area, you know, and you know something, or you know people who live in that area, definitely reach out to the local police if you have any information.
The her legs were cut off?
Yeah. She was severely mutilated. So this is this to me, this type of case really speaks to targeted violence, not like an altercation that kind of went wrong. So like, I'm not saying that Rhea Milton wasn't targeted. I think that she was targeted. But it seems like, you know, a fight broke out and then somebody got shot, versus with Dominique Remy Fels, the whole leg severing and the trauma to her head and face, it kind of screams like similar violence that we see with serial killers and just really targeted racial either hatred or hate crime. It's just, ugh. It's disgusting. It's really fucking disgusting. This happened last week. Literally last week. It reminds me of like the Black Dahlia, you know?
Yeah, the legs being cut off part is super tripping me out, because like the blunt force to the head and everything else sounds like pretty typical
serial killer shit.
No, like sounds like pretty typical, like maybe you got a beating for being, trans black person. But it's cutting the legs off, that's some serial killer shit. So exactly. That's weird.
Yeah, it's really disturbing. So the Philadelphia Office of LGBT Affairs issued a statement in response to Fell's death. And I feel like it's important to remember, quote, as thousands take to the streets to proclaim that Black lives matter, it is critical we remember that this includes Black trans lives. And unquote. I just want to point that out because Black trans people are so disproportionately affected by violence in general. I think that it's important for us to remember that as we advocate for Black lives mattering, we need to work just as hard to advocate and specify that also Black trans lives matter, because as these events have shown, this happened fucking last week, people don't think that Black trans lives matter. So getting heated again. Getting real heated. Oh, such a bummer. Okay, so those are the two cases that happened last week. Again, I'll link the sources in our blog post. There's not a shit ton of just information about it yet. Hopefully more will come out. So I want to talk about some statistics, because I like statistics and they're importante. So the FBI actually reported a significant increase in hate crimes motivated by gender identity bias, also, you know, transphobia, between 2017 and 2018. I think this is significant because this isn't just for gender identity bias, but also racial bias and hate crimes in general have really, really skyrocketed since Trump came into power. So there's a huge correlation with how outspoken he is in his hateful rhetoric. You know, it really emboldens a lot of people to act on things that they may have just thought internally and now they feel like they can. So in 2019, the HRC tracked at least 26 deaths of transgender or gender nonconforming people in the U.S., due to fatal violence, the majority of whom were Black transgender women. So 26 people last year got murdered. And this year, in 2020, the U.S. has already seen at least 14 transgender or gender nonconforming people fatally shot or killed by other violent means. And again, you know, we say this, and I want to say this again, that these stories go unreported or misreported or underreported. So the number could actually be much higher.
It has to be. Those numbers,
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
They don't sound like much to me. Not to say that 26 lives or whatever isn't a lot to have been taken, but
yeah.
No, I feel like it's got to be way more than that. So it must be the underreporting and stuff.
Yeah. And I just want to give a little disclaimer that my perspective of cases like this for our listeners and anybody involved in this true crime genre, to me, this is real true crime. I don't think it gets any truer than these types of crime. I don't think that these types of crimes are talked about enough in the true crime community. I don't think that as a community, we do a good enough job of talking about and discussing cases that affect minorities. We talk a lot about white male serial killers. They get really, really sensationalized. We have movies about them. We have TV shows about them. But true crime also includes these cases. And so I think it's really important as the true crime community to talk about these. And we could have such an impact. The true crime community is huge. If everybody who takes part in that took the time to bring these cases into the light and to push for these cases to be solved, for the people to be prosecuted who inflict all this pain, I think it would make a really big difference. So I would love to see our community kind of step up in this area and not just talk about fucking Jeffrey Dahmer. Fuck Jeffrey Dahmer. I don't give a fuck about Jeffrey Dahmer anymore. I want to talk about things that are happening to people today. And that's my rant.
I'm like, I still like Jeffrey Dahmer. I mean, I don't like him, you know, but. But yeah, no, I agree. Like we do, this stuff needs to be talked about more. And it's not like, yeah. Very much in the true crime community. Yeah, which is really big.
It's getting bigger.
Quite popular.
And, you know, with the popularity that we have in this community, we could use our platform for some actual good stuff. So just, you know, if you're listening, think about it. Think about what you can do to advocate for these people because nobody else is going to do it. I mean, it's just not happening. So I am going to end this with a quote, this little section, and it talks about how while the details of these cases differ, it is super clear that fatal violence disproportionately affects transgender women of color, particularly Black transgender women, and that the intersections of racism, sexism, homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, and unchecked access to guns conspire to deprive them of employment, housing, healthcare, and other necessities. So what this is really talking about, and I'm going to break it down because I know that's a big quote. The stigma against transgender people, coupled with the denial of opportunity and increased risk factors, really come together to create a culture of violence. We're talking about access to guns, talking about the stigma, which leaves them on the streets most of the time. Employment doesn't want anything to do with them. People don't want to employ Black transgender people. So it's a lot of different factors that creates this arena where Black trans lives are being seriously, seriously harmed. This is a short episode.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty heavy, so probably need to be super long.
Doesn't super need to be super long.
We don't need to like continue with this for another 40 minutes.
I mean, just because things are heavy, I don't know. I feel conflicted about it. Like, yes, these things are heavy, but it's same thing with Black Lives Matter. When shit gets heavy, we can't look away from it. We need to like lean into it and talk about it because these topics deserve to be talked about just as much as we talk about other shit that relates to the majority of people. So I want to start with a little takeaway. I saw this on Instagram. This is not from me. I just think it's really important. It's talking about how trans Black women are the reason Pride exists. And I'm going to explain why. So if you aren't supporting Black Lives Matter, you really shouldn't be celebrating Pride. And I'm saying that mostly for my fellow white queer people. You know, we don't, I believe, I don't believe we should celebrate Pride without acknowledging the incredible sacrifice and struggles of specifically Black trans women from the Stonewall uprising. Have you heard of Stonewall? I feel like everybody has, but nobody knows what it's about.
Actually, I just heard them talking about it on another podcast today.
Really? That's so funny. Yeah. That's like good timing. There's been a lot of mentions of Stonewall in media, especially now with, you know, Pride Month and Black Lives Matter in general. So I wanted to give like a really brief overview for listeners just so that they're a little bit more literate when they're looking at media sources that mention it. And because it's super, super, super relevant to today, it's like this could happen right now. Nothing has changed. So sad. So Stonewall was a bar or an inn. It was in Manhattan, and this took place in 1969 on June 27th. So papers tend to call it the Stonewall Uprising and not the Stonewall Riot. You may see it also listed as a Stonewall Riot, but Uprising, you know, is what the papers called it because it played out as a six-day event with skirmishes between young gay, lesbian, and transgender individuals in the New York Police Department. So this raid really happened because of a broader police crackdown on gay bars during this time operating in New York without a state liquor license. Now that sounds like, oh, well, they didn't have a license. They shouldn't be practicing. But the state liquor authority specifically refused to grant bars that served gay people licenses. So they knew that if it was a gay bar, they weren't going to get a license. So they had to practice and do their business anyway to make money.
They had to like pretend it wasn't a gay bar, even if it was gay patrons and a gay owner.
I don't know about pretending, but they were basically forced to operate as like illegal saloons.
Okay.
I don't know how much they tried to hide it or not. I think that the local gay community obviously knew where the right bars were to go so that they would be safe. But I mean, the point is the state refused to grant them licenses and then penalized them for not having a license, which is some backwards shit.
A trap.
It's literally a trap. Exactly. Exactly. So on the night of June 27th, 1969, a police raid on the Stonewall Inn involving the arrests of 13 people inside the bar actually was kind of met with some unexpected resistance because a crowd gathered to protest the arrests and the raid, which is why sometimes it's called a riot. And I love this account of this article. I'm gonna put the link in the blog. The article, just as a reminder that I'm reading from, is from The Atlantic by Grant's Frankie Ruta. So he says, I love this phrase, "The conflict over the next six days played out as a very gay variant of the classic New York street rebellion." So in addition to like all your, you know, typical rebellion, people rising in the streets, you know, which it had like fire hoses turned on people from police, you know, thrown tear gas and, you know, all kinds of stuff that we're actually dealing with today. You know, protesters were also chanting, you know, gay cheerleading chants and variants of like New York City schoolgirl songs, Rockette style kick lines in front of the police.
That's amazing.
It's so cool. They were, you know, screaming gay power and we're the Pink Panthers, which is awesome. But it wasn't as nice and glamorous as that sounds. Like, the violence by the police, again, was very real. They were arresting a lot of people and brutalizing a lot of people who were protesting. So nothing has changed. But, you know.
When did this happen? Yesterday?
Yeah, yesterday? 1969? Is it 1970?
Is it 1970 today?
But basically, long story short, the Stonewall Uprising operated as a sort of de facto community center for gay youth. So it wasn't just a bar. It was a place where a lot of gay youth who were, you know, homeless because of their families kicking them out or institutional rejection, they couldn't get jobs, they couldn't get all these services, used the bar as a place for gathering and a place for resources and mentorship and safety. So, I mean, it's just, it's us setting these types of institutions up to fail And that's one of the main issues. We need better systems in place to take care of these people. You know, we need better youth resources. We need rehab programs. We need better welfare. We need a lot. So yeah, while there's been a lot of progress and acceptance of different sexualities, there's still a long fucking way to go. And Stonewall is, for me, like a mirror. It's basically a reflection of, this is where we were forever ago, yet we're still dealing with the same thing and more today. So it's worth a look into. It's worth, I think, understanding our past so that we can best prepare for our future and try not to make the same mistakes.
And maybe if you're, you know, going to Spencer's to buy your rainbow sweatband.
Maybe don't.
Maybe, you know, donate that to an LGBTQ resource center or something.
Yeah, or a brand that's owned and operated by gay people.
Yeah, there you go. Mm. Then you can still buy your rainbow colored sweatband.
Exactly, exactly. It's the same thing. You know, we're seeing a big push on social media to buy from specifically Black owned businesses, which is fantastic. And I would love to include, you know, Black gay owned businesses or transgender owned businesses, especially, again, because this is specifically Pride Month. All months should be Pride Months, in my opinion, but that's where we're at. So definitely research where you're putting your money to. It's very common and very tricky. You know, you're going to see things like Walmart and Target packaging the Pride flag as a way to support capitalism and to make money. But that's not what these symbols stand for. It's in direct conflict with that because these big companies do not give a fuck about gay people. They're just using the flag to make money, and it's wrong. So please do your best to really vet where you're getting your items from. If you want to be an ally, if you're a queer person stepping into this and want to, you know, surround yourself with these items, that's great. Just make sure that they're actually supporting the cause and not just profiting off of people's struggles.
Yeah.
Thank you for attending my TED Talk, and good night.
This has been Macy Tollison on the outrage of the world.
Oh, God. It's like one topic after another. I feel like I cool down. We research a topic, makes me heated. I cool down. And then next week's episode, I'm like, fuck this. Fuck the world. Fuck everyone. This is so frustrating.
You know, it's funny because I'm such a sensitive person, but I think that with a lot of really heavy, painful stuff that goes on in the world, because there's a lot of it, I feel like I almost kind of put this like layer of apathy on. So I feel like I don't care about stuff, but like I know that I do, but I know that yeah, there's a part of me that, like, as a protective mechanism.
Yeah,
like,
definitely self-defense mechanism.
Yeah. Like, because then when I do start, like, really looking at things and paying attention to the things that I know are going on, but, like, when I look at it, like, it's fucking upsetting, like, to the point where depression and anxiety sets in.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's a delicate balance. I mean, you have to be able to live your life to the best that you can and then focus on also not turning a blind eye, because the bottom line, and, you know, there's plenty of ways that we all do this. I'm not just like speaking about you, Ash, but like the ability to put on that protective layer of apathy is such a privilege. It really, it really is. Like, and it happens. It's okay. It's just, I think that as long as we try our best to like take a second and then bounce back as quickly as we can, you know, so we can keep moving forward is important.
Yeah. I think though, I'm also speaking to just like the animal torture that's going on, like the rainforest burning down, the fucking ice caps melting. Like, I'm not just talking, like,
totally.
I'm talking about like just the world. It's like fucked. And like literally just listing everything. Those things right now, like brings my anxiety up. Like, yeah, my heart just started racing because, like, it's like it, it's like you said, it is a delicate balance between, like, yeah, you do have to look at this stuff, and you, because, yeah, it's like you said, it's like being able to put on that layer of apathy is a privilege, but you also, like, need to take care of yourself. I know people who look at social media from the time they wake up till the time they go to sleep, just scrolling Facebook, reading articles, and yeah, like, it's too much. Like, that's too much. Like, that's not healthy either. Like, you can't pretend like shit's not going on, but, like,
yeah. And then what's the action, right? If you're just scrolling and getting upset, is that productive for the causes that you're getting upset about? Probably not. Informing yourself is always good, but if it's just informing yourself, I feel like, and not doing anything about it, for me, that's a big distinction. Like, if I'm passionate about something, I want to do something about it so that I feel like at least I'm trying and other people are trying to get this resolved, instead of just intaking all this upsetting information and yeah, then not having a release for it or somewhere for it to go. It just sits in your body and it just becomes even more upsetting because you didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
It's fucking hard. I feel you. It's just been an upsetting week. I mean, I was texting you earlier, you know, Trump just passed basically he lifted the anti-discrimination laws in healthcare for gay people. And he lifted it on my birthday, which was, like, not only, of course, terrible, but then I also realized that my birthday is the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub massacre that also happened on my birthday.
Happy birthday, Macy.
Yeah, what a great day. I thought it was a great day. No, but it was just overwhelming, like, you know, fearing for my own healthcare and realizing, like, well, I don't have on any of my healthcare forms that I'm straight. Like, does that mean that I'm going to not receive the same healthcare moving forward? Like, that freaked me the fuck out. So after a little research, you know, luckily it depends on your doctor. And I really have a good relationship with my doctor. I know that she's not an asshole or a bigot. So I'm not worried about me right now. But in the future, that's definitely something I'm concerned about if I ever switch plans or doctors or insurances. It's really upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's heavy. It's a lot.
Thanks so much for listening.
Happy birthday.
Fuck, this is short. This is a short, depressing episode. God damn.
I didn't even play bingo.
I didn't either.
Did you?
No, there's no point. It's too late. But also, I don't feel like there's enough details about these cases.
No, I don't think there would have been.
We don't.
And I don't, it's not typical.
No.
It's not.
Maybe if we had more details about Dominique Remy Fells, you know, because she was murdered and very mutilated. But we don't know who that person was. They're probably a sick fuck who would check stuff off on bingo, but we don't know who it is. So.
Yeah, totally.
Well, hopefully, hopefully we can learn from this episode, do some things with it. Again, check out the blog. We're going to link some sources for you guys to get involved. And thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Make sure.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for being here. Thank you for attending my TED Talk. And again, you know, if you can take the time to rate and subscribe, we really appreciate it. And if you leave us a review, you will be entered into a monthly drawing to win special limited edition TSFU merch. We have some new merch in the pipeline that we're really excited about. We have sent out a few items already as gifts, so look out for that on our social media. If you want to leave a review and be entered, make sure you take a screenshot and send it to us. We get a lot of reviews, and you know, we can only see national reviews. We can't see international. So especially if you're an international listener, send us a screenshot of your review. And thank you to J.R.R. Owens and Dylan for reviews this week. That was super, super, super nice.
I loved Dylan's. It was so funny. He said, like, Warning, you may experience depression in between episodes. If that happens, go back and listen to old episodes and repeat until a new one comes out.
That's hilarious. Oh my God. That's super, super funny. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So clever. Cute. Well, also thank you to Fella T-O-M-G for recommending us to your sister. I think it's
Fellatio, my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. You're such a nerd.
Oh my God. How did I not see that? Well, thank you, Fellatio MG.
Fellatio.
My fucking prude ass over here. Even though I'm not a prude, but goddamn, how did I not see that? Well, apparently.
You're like, what is that? What is.
What's a. Fella, what's a fella.
Flosh? Yeah.
What's a Fellatio? Well, apparently they recommended us to their sister.
Yeah, she's getting her sister on board. So we really love when you guys, you know, recommend us to your sisters or your brothers or your friends or whoever. If you share us on social media, definitely word of mouth is kind of the best way for us to get our name out there. You know, we're still trying to get off the ground.
Definitely. Well,
you know, we're off the ground. We're fucking flying high, baby.
We're trying to soar.
Oh, we're soaring.
We're soaring.
So soaring, yeah.
Well, last thank you to our sweet Facebook moderator, Belle. She runs our private Facebook group, and you guys should definitely join. It's growing. We got a lot of members in there. She posts dope content. Me and Ash are in there. We're active. So check out our Facebook page and then go to the groups tab on our Facebook page to join.
Yeah, we have like 30 people, I think.
You mean 30,000 people? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, 30,000 group members.
Don't tell them that. Tell them it's 30,000 so they think it's exclusive.
30's popping.
Yeah, 30's popping. 30's a big party.
Yeah, and it's got a fun name. That's fucked up. The group ease.
The ease is in parentheses. It's funnier when you see it. Just go check it out.
Yeah, sorry. It's not as funny. Over words. So yeah, go join it.
Over
it's
words.
A good time.
Over words.
what are words?
What are words?
Yeah.
Oh man.
So if you played bingo today and won, which you probably didn't, send it to us. But even if you won bingo in a previous episode, send that to us.
Yeah, definitely.
Just, you know, any bingo. And, like we said at the top, we'll put you in a drawing and maybe do one of your episode requests. And that is all she wrote.
That's it, folks. I can't do a, what's the pig?
Let's all. That was pretty close.
It sounded like you were like possessed. Like we needed an exorcism to happen real quick. That was hilarious.
Wait. Nope. It's not gonna get much better than the exorcist.
That's not all, folks.
Go follow us on all the social media, you guys. TSFU the podcast, and make sure to listen to our bonus episode because we're throwing one of those out at you guys today.
Woo! And call your senators. Go vote. Donate your money. And don't be a bigot. Good night.
Yep. Bye-bye now.
Bum, 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 bum. That's fucked up. I'm so fucked up. Can't you see? It's just really fucked. That's fucked up.